For most of the history of the American cinema, the on-screen portrayal of people of color has been problematic. The representations of Mexicans and Mexican-Americans in our television and film heritage is no exception, and a new book illuminates how those representations were built and have evolved over the decades. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. My guest today is UTEP Associate Professor Roberto Avant-Mir, co-author of the new book, Cine Mexicans, An Introduction to Chicano Cinema. The book is published by Kendall Hunt Publishing Company and is available online, and I'm happy to have Roberto Avant-Mir on the program today. Good morning.
Good morning, Charles. Thank you for having me.
I don't know how I've not had you on the program before, but welcome.
Thank you for saying that. I've thought that, too. I should talk to that guy. I should be friends with that guy.
I'm so glad that we finally crossed paths, and you're right here in the Department of Communication at UTEP. Your co-author on this is Michael Lechuga.
Michael Lechuga.
Fantastic. Set us up. This is a big topic. You're surveying how Mexicans and Mexican-Americans have been portrayed in the cinema, which goes back over 100 years now.
Sure.
So it's a big topic. How did you break this down, and how did this evolve in your own mind as you were getting to this book?
Well, first of all, the basis of this book is the idea that there is a thing called Chicano cinema, which, you know, broadly speaking, means that Mexican-Americans, beginning after the Chicano movement, decided we need to make better films about us, right? Tired of the same old representations, tired of the stereotypes, they said, let's make movies for ourselves, by ourselves, that represent us better, that represent us differently, that avoid the same old stereotypes. So that's the first thing that needs to be said about what Chicano cinema means, right? It's an intentional way of let's make better movies about us. And if the mainstream movie industry is not going to do it, we need to do it ourselves.
And it was part of a broader political moment as well.
Exactly. So we're talking about after the Chicano movement, which we're speaking of the late 1960s, early 70s, and the movement to sort of achieve the goals of that movement through film and cinema, right, begins probably in the 70s, right, 1970s. But there's a backstory. The backstory to this is, you know, what were they reacting to? What were they sort of reacting against? And that takes us back to the beginnings of cinema, right, which we could be talking about the 1890s or 1900s or 1910s, right? If you talk about the history of U.S. cinema, we know for a fact, and it's been well documented by many scholars and film historians, right, is that, you know, Mexicans weren't represented very well.
Right.
As always, stereotypes, you know, always banditos, always bad guys, you know, villains to be conquered or killed.
Or Latin lovers.
Exactly. The men were Latin lovers. If that was, you know, that was the best case scenario,
right,
where we weren't a bandito, we were a Latin lover. Women were really, you know, stereotyped also through sex and lust and, you know, attractiveness, you know.
Or servitude.
Or oversexed Latinos, servitude, and, you know, yeah, all kinds of stuff for both men and women. So, you know, the history of U.S. cinema specifically, just talking about the United States, informs the birth of this thing called Chicano cinema, right? Again, Chicano cinema is reacting to the history of U.S. cinema, which is, A, that we don't appear, right? So when you talk about Mexicans or Mexican-Americans or Latinos or Hispanics, it's the idea that, you know, U.S. cinema is historically racist, right? Racist by omission.
Right.
And then when we do appear, it's always through stereotypes, cliches, overused conventional characters, stock characters, right?
I guess a big part of the Chicano movement, too, was a recognition of not only the false representations or negative representations on screen of Mexicans and Mexican-Americans, but the need to correct that by putting people behind the camera.
Absolutely. And from what I've been reading, that came later, right? So the initial impulse of Chicano cinema is let's make movies about ourselves that are going to be going against, right? Let's make us normal. Let's make us, you know, regular people. So the idea becomes first to make movies. But one of the things that I tell my students in the class is it doesn't make sense to judge, like, those early movies that are made by Mexicans or Chicanos, right? They look rough around the edges. They're not well made. They look like home movies. They're really, you know, they look kind of amateurish, and they were literally amateurish, right? They were amateurish efforts. Why? Because there weren't people working in the industry that looked like us and that were getting the opportunity to be behind a camera.
Mm-hmm.
There was no such thing as a Mexican-American or Chicano scriptwriter or screenwriter. You know what I mean? That just didn't exist. They were Mexicans and Mexican-Americans were systematically excluded from the movie industry, and we know this, and this is well documented, right? So it becomes this impulse, first of all, let's make the movies, and that's all good and fine, But then it's going to be a push by the late 70s. They realized, okay, we need to get people working in the industry.
Right.
And once we get people working in the industry by the late 70s, early 80s, then the movies start to get better. We might say that they look more professional, and that leads into what we would call, you know, what I call in our book, the classic period of Chicano cinema, which was the movies got good. And by that time, we're talking about the 1980s, 1990s.
Yeah, and independent cinema is on the rise at that point through technological advances, which are then allowing all sorts of people of color or marginalized filmmakers to make more professional-looking product.
Exactly.
And so you see those confluence of developments there.
Exactly.
So you've broken down the review of these representations into multiple eras, I guess half of them in the classic period and half of them post-1970. Walk us through how you organized those eras and what was developing or evolving in those eras.
Well, the simple thing is, you know, when you talk about movies, any film history, any film studies, you know, it's really, I'm always amazed at how complicated it is, right? Because there's always all kinds of eras. And when it comes to even Chicano cinema, right, there are people that have been doing this work for a few decades. And I've read a book that breaks Chicano cinema down into like 7 different eras and 9 different eras, right? So it always depends on who you ask. One of the things that my colleague and I, my co-author, were trying to do is keep it simple, break it down, right? So we broke it down into what we call basic 4 simple eras of, you know, Mexican Americans in U.S. film. So the first one is very obviously, you know, the pre-Chicano era. And that's going to be from the beginning of film, right, from the advent of film, let's say 1890s to the 1950s. There is no such thing as Mexican Americans making their own films, right? This is about Hollywood. Hollywood is representing us.
Yes.
And again, you know, we mostly don't appear, but then when we do, it's through stereotypes. The next major phase would be the Chicano era, because the Chicano era beginning in the 60s is what sort of produces this thing called Chicano cinema. Let's make our own movies. The Chicano era, you know, we broke it down in our book from, you know, 1960s, 1970s. And that's the era of political activism. It's the, you know, after the 1960s, it's what we all know, you know, farm worker strikes, Cesar yeah. Chavez, Dolores Huerta, right? 60s and 70s.
So putting film in the context of all these other upheavals.
Exactly. Well, one of the, I think, interesting things for me to find out in my research all these years later was that, you know, I didn't know about the Chicano movement being partly a reaction to media stereotypes, and that media stereotypes was one of the things that some people were fighting for, right? So we've heard about the grape strikes. We've heard about the war, protesting the war. We've heard about all these different, you know, aspects. But one of the ones was, you know, people were concerned about media stereotypes. And that's one small aspect of the Chicano movement that sort of, you know, maybe a little bit forgotten. But for a media scholar like myself, it's interesting to me. And I thought, you know, we need to sort of bring this back, that this was
part
of the Chicano movement.
You can't be taken seriously in the broader population if they're looking down on you.
Exactly.
All of the media that they're...
Exactly. And we were consuming that media as well. We
sure.
were consuming all those movies and television
internalizing
shows.
Internalizing those exactly. stereotypes.
Exactly. So the next era, which would be the third, would be the right after the Chicano movement. And it's going to be the 1980s and 90s. And we call it the classic era. Because in this era, there were a bunch more movies. They got popular. They were making a lot of money. Movies like La Bamba. Cheech and Chong movies arguably could be considered, right? They were very popular, made a lot of money. You see a lot of collaborations, right? So we call this the classic period because it was sort of a successful period for Chicano filmmakers. After the 1990s, we get to sort of where we are now, which is we call the new Chicano era. So basically those 4 periods, right? Mark what the 2 major ones in the middle is the Chicano era in the middle and then right after the Chicano movement, the classic period.
I grew up watching Warner Brothers cartoons and characters like Speedy Gonzalez,
yes.
which is in your book.
I did too.
And other other representations. Was there a time as a kid that you were aware seeing Mexicans or Mexican Americans portrayed on screen and feeling odd about it? Or was it just a normal thing for you to...
You know, truthfully, I really wonder how many people will have the same reaction. I suspect a lot of people will have a very similar reaction. Growing up here, a Mexican-American kid in El Paso, I never thought about the representations, right? I talk about Speedy Gonzalez as his character that, you know, it's a cartoon mouse and it's funny and I watched it as a kid and I enjoyed it as a kid, right? We consumed these images and I probably thought it was funny. And being a Mexican-American, you see the Mexican sort of mouse with a bandito running around being funny. And we probably laughed at it, right? We don't have a sort of like, you know, critical consciousness at that point. But even as adults, right, I can imagine that we consume it, we laugh at it, we think it's entertaining and we think it's funny. But it is problematic because, you know, even though I enjoyed it as a kid, never really thought about it, never really was aware of a stereotype. I didn't know what a stereotype was when I was a kid, right? But I think when you're hungry for images about Mexicans or images of Hispanics, right, you tend to see the one or two or three few examples and you like them because you see yourself on TV and you're kind of excited about that. Maybe you're a little bit happy about that.
Interesting.
Now, I don't know if that's a reach, but I think that's probably where I was, right? We're so hungry for images about ourselves that we like it. Now, as a grown-up going to college and taking media studies courses, and you're like, oh, wow, that Speedy Gonzalez was pretty bad. Yeah. As we talked about in the book, right, really problematic history all the way back to the name originating from a sort of joke about, you know, stereotyping Mexicans, to he was a Latin lover, to if you go back and see some of those cartoons, they sleep in the trash, the Mexicans are all thieves, you know, they're running around trying, that's his whole thing is trying to get cheese.
While he's really fast, his friends are usually always on siesta.
Yes, and they're all really slow, so they can't really steal cheese because they're slow.
Right.
You know, when I was a kid, even as a probably, you know, teenager, you know, I never really thought about it, just thought it was funny. If you analyze it now, especially from a media studies perspective and understanding stereotypes and sort of looking at things through a different lens, it's like, oh wow, these are really problematic. You know?
There's a lot being smuggled into our minds through this.
Exactly.
the book is one of the things I like about the book is it's very interactive. You've got links and suggestions to follow up on, and also questions to ask, and it feels like a teaching guide as well. And I'm wondering, in your own classes, how young people living in the age we're living in now are responding to all of this history, which is, I imagine, probably new to most of them because they didn't grow up with these images.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, I mean, part of the answer to your question is the reason why I wanted it to be interactive, right, is because one of the things that I think educators are dealing with across the board is, you know, trying to get young people to read a book. Right. Even in college, right, where, you know, supposedly students are supposed to, you know, be opening the book. But there's a little bit of resistance to reading. And so I was trying to make a book that, you know, as you said, it's interactive. It asks questions. It invites the reader to go to a website. Right. You can click on the link and you know, find out more information. What I'm trying to do is get students to be exploring. Take what I'm giving you in this chapter or in this paragraph and find out more about it. Right. It's an invitation to be curious. And we'll see if it works. To answer your question, this is the first semester. This book just came out, right? So this is the first semester of me using it in class, and we will find out what the reaction to it. So far, the reaction I can tell you in my class so far these past few months, September and October, is most students are having the same reaction that I had that I just spoke of, which is that I didn't really realize this. I never paid attention to it, never really thought about it, whether it's Speedy Gonzalez or the character Tuco in Breaking Bad or the way Mexicans are represented in movies. You know, most of us don't think about it. And especially if we're watching movies for entertainment, having fun with our friends or our family, you know, we don't necessarily want to think critically. We're not trying to think about stereotypes. We're not questioning images, whether it's about women or men or people of a different race or, you know, Latino, Chicano. We're not thinking that. We're just being entertained by it. And so, you know, I think people are for the first time say, oh, wow, I never thought about this before. My students are telling me, you know, I didn't really think about stereotypes. Now I'm thinking about it all the time. Now I'm paying attention to how we are constructed in the media.
Well, important history. I'm glad you're teaching it. I'm glad you've written the book and people can find it now online. So thank you for coming in today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
I've been discussing the new book, Cine Mexicans, An Introduction to Chicano Cinema, and how the representation of Mexicans and Mexican-Americans has changed over many decades with one of the book's authors, Roberto Avant-Mir. Avant-Mir is an associate professor in the Department of Communication at the University of Texas at El Paso. Cine Mexicans is published by Kendall Hunt Publishing Company and is available online. For an extended version of today's conversation, log on to the On Film Archive at ktep.org. On Film's engineer is Seth Van Meter. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.